I think I heard you say that spiritual people can create the most faith, but also the most doubt in others. So can you explain more about that?
Well, I'll tell you a story. I heard this story. I don't know if it's a mythological story, but anyway, it's a good story, so I'll tell it anyway. Once there was Kali, and he had three agents. And he told the agents, I want you to go out into the world and spread my influence. So one of them went out and he said, he came back and Kali said, what did you do to spread my influence? He said, I induced a man to steal from a shop. He said, you did okay. The second agent came back and Kali said, what did you do to spread my influence? And he said, I caused a husband and wife to argue and separate. He said, you did okay. The third agent came back and Kali said, what did you do to spread my influence? And he said, I caused a saintly person to break his vows. And Kali said, you've done the best. Because spiritual life is resting on faith. Everything in spiritual journey is resting on faith. And when faith is damaged, then it basically rocks the very foundations of our spirituality. So spiritual people are creating a lot of faith, you know, because if all of us think of how we began spiritual life, that seed of faith was planted by a devotee. Yes. Otherwise, Krishna bhakti janma mula hoya sadhu sang, Krishna bhakti prema deho puna mukhya ang. Kaviraj Goswami says that Krishna bhakti janma mula, the very root cause of Krishna bhakti being awakened within one's heart, is association of devotees. But that also means the opposite is also true, that the seed of doubt also begins with devotees. And therefore you find in religious traditions, religious history, religious organizations, that the most turbulent times have always been when people's faith has been shaken, and often that faith is shaken because of practitioners within that tradition itself. And so each of us have a great responsibility, because just by the way we carry ourselves, we're contributing to a community of faith or a community of doubt. And if there is doubt, then spiritual progression is very difficult. And Krishna also says that agyascha shradadhanascha samsayatma vinashyati nayam lokosti na paro nasukham samsayatmanah. Krishna says, for the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in this world nor the next. So this is why it's so important that the purity of each individual is contributing to a community of faith. And where there's that community of faith, then spirituality strives. But where there's doubt, because of doubt in individuals, then everything tends to stagnate and go down. I don't know if you want to respond to that or if you'd like to ask more.
No, I was just thinking about sometimes.
I was thinking that sometimes maybe also when you were telling about this, that sometimes maybe the doubt is in the person who cannot see the saintly person for who he is also.
Yeah.
Like with Ulrich Vizanidi, I think is his name.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so then...
So yeah, no, that's definitely true. And Chaitanya Charitamrita again says that Tandra Vakya Kriya Mudra Vigyayana Bhujoy, that sometimes people cannot understand the mind's words and activities of a Vaishnava. So sometimes there's also that potential for misunderstanding. They say the problem in Kali Yuga is that leaders do questionable things and followers question everything. So it's a problem from both sides. But at least from one side, if we can solve it by trying to act in the most, carry oneself with integrity, then at least from one side we can solve the problem. The other side, that people question everything and people tend to see fault and people criticize, that you can't do. But if that tendency to be critical, fault find, be judgmental is fueled by then someone who does questionable things, that adds more fuel to the fire. So, yeah, that's Kali Yuga. Leaders do questionable things and followers question everything. Problem for both sides. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
I just had the same question on the same topic. Why are we doubting? Why?
Why do we doubt?
Yes.
Well, one reason we doubt is because we came to the world to be independent. And so that tendency to not want to believe in something higher, to not want to be part of something higher, is running very strong. So like, we often doubt to justify our desire to want to be independent. You know, that's also why we criticize, we fault find. Like, really, we don't want to be under someone, so then at the first opportunity where there's a fault, we say, see, I'm justified for not wanting to follow this person, you know. So that's one reason. I think another reason we are, we take a tendency towards doubt is because our faith has been also broken in so many ways in the material world over so many lifetimes. And sometimes our faith has been broken in material things, and then we take over that faith that has been broken in material things and then take that tendency over to spiritual things. For example, a child grew up with senior figures in their life who they couldn't trust, therefore they grow up with a trust problem. And then later on, when it comes to a spiritual organization, when there are spiritual people to put trust in, they carry that over from their material experience. So because we have been caused to doubt the material world, we carry that over and then use it to doubt in the spiritual sphere as well. So that. And then I think another reason why we doubt in spiritual life is because of this, that even within the spiritual sphere, often our faith is broken and our faith is, you know, so naturally then. So I guess, yeah, but it's a very good question. I guess there could be so much more to say on that. Yeah.
I had a question regarding what Mataji said, and also what Prabhu was talking about, but you were talking about when we get disappointed from the material world and then we put that onto our spiritual world. But what happens when we face disappointments in our community, in our spiritual community, and our faith is broken? And my question is, what is the internal process for restoring our faith?
Yeah. The first thing we have to realize is that when we read the Bhagavatam, basically the Bhagavatam, one way you could look at it is it's a book of mistakes. In the first canto, Parikshit makes a mistake. In the second canto, Brahma makes a mistake. He gets attracted to his own daughter. In the fourth canto, Dhruva makes a mistake. In the fifth canto, Bharat makes a mistake. He gets attached to a deer. In the sixth canto, Ajamil makes a mistake. He sees a prostitute, he falls down. Basically, but it's not just a book of mistakes, it's also a book of recovery. So Parikshit recovers, Dhruva recovers, Brahma recovers, Ajamil recovers. First thing we have to understand is that we're living in a time of many faults. Kaler dosha nidhe rajan. This Kali Yuga is also not faults. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says, weakness in Kali Yuga is not a disqualification, but cheating is. So when there is weakness in this age, then we should not be surprised, and also then we should not write someone off. But where there is cheating, then that is more troublesome. So I think the first thing is we just have to not have a utopian idea of how spiritual communities will be, how spiritual people will be. Prabhupada writes one famous letter and he says, don't expect utopia even in the Krishna consciousness movement. Right? We're in a hospital, and a hospital means people come here to get better. And by default, a hospital means it's full of people who have an illness. So naturally, there are going to be problems. That's natural. But then it's more a question of how we manage that and how we create a compassionate and a proper environment where such things can be addressed and others are not harmed in their journey by that. Other thing I think we have to do is we have to just be the change we want to see in the world. And I know sometimes that may feel like it's just, may feel like we're not addressing the root of the issue. But what can we do? We have to come forward. If every individual comes forward in a mood of trying to be an exemplar of Krishna consciousness, then the more devotees, then that will saturate the society with positivity and trust and faith, and the other things will gradually disappear. So we have to change the narrative and not always be focused on everything out there that's going wrong, but deeply looking within ourselves and ask, like, what can I do to help it go right? What can I do to help people's faith? So yeah, I think these are, I don't know if you want to respond to that or yes. Yeah. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I would like to ask, we were discussing today with one Prabhu the point, what should be our attitude in a devotional service, talking about the beginning state of devotional practice. And one opinion was that we should still seek, even in a Krishna consciousness, for enjoying. And another, because he was quoted some verse that we are enjoy joy seeking
pleasure seeking entities.
Yeah, entities. And another point was, another side was saying that as we are in the hospital, so what we can actually enjoy when we are in an unhealthy state. So if we should stand aside to still seek the joy, or to first think of Krishna that he should be happy and like this become healthy, and in that healthy state to enjoy in the correct position.
Yeah. So while we're beginning devotional life, should we seek enjoyment or should we just seek service, and then just in that service find our enjoyment?
So if I can add something, because nowadays we can see that in the Krishna consciousness movement is moving more toward to be nice, to have nice heart to each other. It's not like in Prabhupada's time, like really only service to Krishna. So how to find also the balance maybe, or yeah, how to deal with this enjoyment.
Yeah. Ultimately, Bhagavatam is explaining how the soul will be fully satisfied. Let's begin there. So Bhagavatam says, Save pumsham paro dharmo yato bhakti radok sajay ahai tuki apratihata yayatma suprasidati. If you want to have atma suprasidati, which means complete satisfaction of the soul, then you have to find a type of life in which your devotion is not motivated by anything and is not interrupted by anything. If someone says, I'm in Krishna consciousness but I don't feel happy, then it means two things. Their devotion is interrupted or it's motivated, and probably both, to a greater or lesser degree. So that's where we're trying to go. But in the beginning, you know, we are not there. We have desires. We have we have a heart which has a vacuum, and we need something to keep us going. And therefore, sometimes we will just cook something really nice that all the devotees like. And it's not that they just like it because it's prasadam. They actually just like the taste of it. It's not just done for Krishna, you know. Is that a bad thing? Well, it's not the ultimate thing. The ultimate thing is just to do everything for Krishna. But is it a bad thing? Not necessarily, if it keeps you on the path going forward to Krishna. In the beginning, we may not be able to develop that level of purity where it's just like everything for Krishna, nothing for me. So on the journey, we may in our spiritual life have different types of enjoyment in spiritual life which don't take us back, which are not harmful, which are not sinful, because they may just help us to keep going. And then later on we realize, I don't even need those supports, let me just serve Krishna. So sometimes, you know, Srila Prabhupada, he saw that the devotees were going out in 26 Second Avenue, you know, like the class would start and then halfway through the class some faces would disappear. And then later on Prabhupada found out because there was a donut shop or ice cream shop. You know, you duck out of the class, get a quick ice cream and donut, and then come back for prasadam to the temple. So then what did Prabhupada do? He made a jar in 26 Second Avenue and he filled it with gulab jamuns. And he called them ISKCON bullets. And he said, they're here, anytime you're hungry, anytime you want one, just take one. Right? Because that helped to just keep them there. So was that like no motivation, everything for Krishna? No, it wasn't, not, but it was okay, it's in spiritual life. So we have to be practical, we have to be realistic, and then we have to aim towards a life in which we're giving more and more to Krishna without any consideration of my enjoyment. But you can't imitate that level of purity immediately. If you do, it may not be sustainable. And so sometimes the analogy is given that we control the mind like someone riding a horse. On the reins, sometimes they pull to control the horse. But if you just keep pulling all the time, the horses sometimes can become more and more agitated. Therefore, with the horses, sometimes you pull and sometimes you just let them run a little bit. But not too much, then you pull again. And like this, you control. So sometimes it's like that. Let yourself have a bit of enjoyment, which is not going to violate your Krishna consciousness, take you back. But sometimes you just need. And then eventually, you'll come to the point where naturally it's flowing towards Krishna. Does that make sense? Balance.
Hot mic, hot potato. Thinking what to ask. I have a kind of a big question, and then so I was wondering about you mentioned nicely how who is the Supreme Personality of Krishna and the nectar of devotion, and you also are very you mentioned how the structuring part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, structuring the movement, the six Goswamis, and you've helped with your books, I just want to say. Thank you for those books of structuring the Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita. And I was just wondering if Nectar Devotion is in the is coming up or something. and just because on my, it's kind of fallen to the background, Nectar Devotion, I remember in Bhakti Shastri I got some of it, but not very, familiar with it in one sense, and so I was wondering if you could. I'm guessing it's going to come up as well, so I don't want to, detract from what you were going to say. But if you wanted to share
something on the next, I mean, it's funny you should say that. We were thinking for some time. I was speaking with His Holiness Sachinanda Maharaj as well, and we were talking about this, that perhaps one of the needs in the Krishna consciousness movement is to have like a modern day kind of bhakti handbook of like not just the practices of bhakti, but what's the internal journey that we go through at different stages in our spiritual life. And when we perform certain angas of devotional service, how that affects us, what obstacles come up, the anartas and so on, but making it very contemporary according to what we experience. So we began working on that actually. We took the Nectar of Devotion by Rupa Goswami. Then we also took the Madhurya Kadambini by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, where he talks about the 9 stages of devotional service. And then we took the Bhakti Sandarbha, where Jiva Goswami also talks about the practices of bhakti. And then we took contemporary, Shivram Maharaj has written Sudha Bhakti Chintamani. And so we were looking at all 4 of those and seeing like, what is it, how can we create something which will be like a handbook to help devotees understand what may happen at different stages in their spiritual life, how to react to that, and different insights that the acharyas give as to how to advance your devotional life at different stages. So it's in the pipeline. Let's see, Krishna allows.
I don't know if I'll be able to formulate the question properly, but you mentioned how basically everyone is searching for rasa. And I know this is kind of a, I don't know if it's a suitable question to ask, but I just never thought about it in this angle, that actually we understand that we come to this world, we're also trying to experience rasa, but the reason we come is because of that mistake of free will. But isn't rasa itself blamed? Because in that sense we have all the enjoyment in the spiritual world, but it seems that we still have this desire to search something else. So does that mean that because rasa is unlimited and the desire of the jiva is unlimited, that actually in one sense we are always here, also the spiritual world is ever increasing? That means we've never reached perfection in that sense. Of course, everything is perfect, but the perfection is always increasing. So that's what actually gives us the opportunity to make that mistake. Is that correct? That rasa in itself has, like free will, is the greatest thing. We can love Krishna. We can also choose to so-called separate ourselves. So rasa seems to also give us
support that.
Support
that idea that, of course, yes. Of course, the fall of the jiva and, the origin of the jiva and that, has many dimensions to it. But this is a very good point, that anandam buddhivardhanam, that rasa is an ever-increasing ocean, and therefore you're saying that in the spiritual world, although we're experiencing rasa, does that curiosity, Srila Prabhupada seems to explain it as a curiosity, like what would it be like to be separate? And does the fact that that rasa is ever increasing further back up that yes, the jiva may become curious, because it's not that they're not satisfied, but because rasa is ever increasing, they may desire to experience a different kind of rasa. Yeah, I've never, I've never explained it like that, but as you say it, it sounds like something which, yeah, could be used to explain it. I think one of the main difficulties, just to go back to the origin of the jiva question, why it's so difficult to understand, is because we're dealing basically with, this is going away from the rasa, but I'm just talking about the jiva question because you asked it. I think it's difficult to pin it down in that way, like describe it in that way, because you're dealing with two different time dimensions. Right? You've heard this explanation, that imagine like this is this is the time scale on the earthly planets. Okay? So you know this concept that as you go higher and higher in the universe, then time dilates. So that, like, you know, a certain time in Brahmaloka is a huge, you know, one day on Brahmaloka is 6 months on the earthly planets. So time dilates as you go higher and higher. And then when you come to the point of the causal ocean, which is the, you know, meeting point of the spiritual and material world, then time is at zero. And then in the spiritual world, it's just like going like this, like in another time dimension. So then when we talk about the origin of the jiva, when we're trying to talk about it as a linear narrative, and then we were in the spiritual world, and then we decided to leave, and then we came, and then we went back, you can't really talk about it as a linear narrative, because now you're talking about events which are spanning two different time dimensions. If there's no time in the spiritual world, how can the jiva ever leave a place in which there's no time? When did he leave? Well, there's no time there. How can you re-enter a place that has no time? You're always there. So then it becomes somewhat of an inconceivable matter to look at it as a linear narrative. But your point that, yes, the idea that there's ever-increasing rasa could lend weight to the fact that, yes, maybe the jiva could be also ever searching for more rasa, and in that potentially misuse free will and come to the material world. Yeah, good point.
Just to know you're speaking, a thing arose in my mind. You're speaking now, then if there are less time, there are less matter. More time, more material. Then is the time, Krishna says, time I am, is the time a kind of punisher, a punishment?
Time a punishment. Yeah, Krishna says, kalosmi, time I am. And then we say in the spiritual world there's no time. So when Krishna says, kalosmi, then he's referring to himself in kala roop, the form of time in which he destroys everything. So you can say in the material world, Krishna in his form as kala roop is a kind of punishment. Because in the spiritual world, there's nothing to destroy because everything is eternal, everything is sat, chit, ananda, everything is pure and absolute. But in the material world, we have matter. And so what Krishna does in the material world in the form of time is he begins destroying things. He destroys attachments, he destroys relationships, he destroys situations. Basically, he destroys our hopes. Now you could say it's a form of punishment, but actually it's the ultimate form of compassion. Because what Krishna is basically doing is he's destroying everything so that we'll finally understand what's real. This is called destructive enlightenment. Yeah, therefore, yasyaham anugranami harishe tadhanam shane tatodhanam tyajantasya svajana dukadukitam. Krishna says, when I especially favor, then I get destructive. Svajana dukha dukitam, one misery after another. So yeah, it's a kind of punishment and it's the ultimate compassion at the same time, because it reveals to us. Yeah.
I have a question regarding this higher taste and rasa relationship. Does it, at the beginning especially, because at the beginning we have to approach a spiritual master, right? And we develop a certain taste and a relationship with him. And is this relationship actually the foundation of the relationship with Krishna and rasa with Krishna? Because there is a spiritual relationship, and like in service and trying to satisfy, so I'm not talking about rasa, like Krishna rasa, but because there are these spiritual emotions, are they like something that's teaching us also about this rasa with Krishna? Because then it develops even further. Would you say maybe something about that?
So in this world we establish a relationship with the spiritual master, and there is naturally a rasa there with the spiritual master, a way in which we interact. And is that any indication, or does that have any connection to our rasa in the spiritual world, or mellows in the spiritual? Is that what your question?
And it also develops it in a way, because this is our
first step towards something that's more pure in the sense of the relationship.
Yeah.
Because we tend to, my mentor, he says that we tend to humanize the relationship with Krishna, because we reflect the relationships we have here in the material world in that sense. But the relationship with the spiritual master, it seems to be more spiritual. I don't know how to explain. Maybe I also don't know how to formulate very nicely the question. But it's because for me personally, the first taste of spiritual life came from the spiritual master, and the taste of some kind of relationship which is totally different, which is the spiritual basis.
Yeah.
And it awakens in you surrender, right?
Yeah.
So in that sense, I don't know if...
I mean, if you look at the five rasas of relationships with Krishna, whether it's conjugal, parental, fraternal, servitude, or the basis of all of them, the four main ones, is service. Whether you're in a conjugal relationship with Krishna, a fraternal, a servant, a parent, the basis of it all is service. The gopis are serving Krishna. The cowherd boys are serving Krishna, but they're all doing it in their own mood. But the basis of it all is seva bhav. And therefore, when we're connecting with a spiritual master, even when we're connecting with the deities in the beginning, Srila Prabhupada said we're worshipping the deities in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan, because in the beginning it's not that we're approaching Krishna in Vrindavan, but we're worshipping with reverence, with punctuality, with cleanliness, with a high consideration of rules and regulations to do it perfectly, because basically we're trying to develop the mood of being a servant. So with the spiritual master, this is the basis of the relationship, that what we're trying to do is become a genuine servant of the spiritual master, a genuine assistant in their service to Krishna. We're trying to put our desires second and put the desires of our spiritual seniors at the forefront, and try to then mold our life around those desires and move in that direction. And by developing that seva bhav with the spiritual master, which is much more accessible, much more tangible, much more real, and requires a genuine surrender in the here and now, then we are much more likely to be able to approach Krishna in that mood of service. So I would say that's the main emotion that we're trying to develop with the spiritual master, with the deities, in the Vaishnava community, is a mood of service. That's the basis of everything. And through that, the nuances of how you relate to Krishna and how you relate in the spiritual reality, that will be revealed in time. So yeah, those are just some
Yes, yeah. You can follow up if you like.
Yeah, that's also what I thought. And also what's... it's like I feel that this... because I was also reading this book of B.L. Kapoor.
Oh, B.L. Kapoor.
Yes, thank you. About experiences in bhakti, and there he explains about the relationship and the rasa that the devotees have, actually, especially with the deities. That's quite inspiring. But this thing is that it's like for us to experience it. It's like, it's totally individual. Like, we can talk about it, like we are now, and like you will present it and everything. But in the end, it's like all theory until this revelation comes in the heart. So in that sense, that's why I said, like, maybe I don't know how to articulate all these things. We have the revelations in the relationship with the spiritual master. So in the same sense, there will be like revelations in that rasa, like with Krishna.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in that sense, it's like similar. So, but yes, the basis of it all is, of course,
service.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And the relationships of this world and how they connect to the spiritual world in the life of a sadhaka is very much about the relationships of this world of or purification, so that later on we can enter into the perfection. But in the case of siddhas or spiritually perfected souls, eternal associates, then is also, you're right, that the relationships here are not just a preparation or a purification to enter, but they reflect what actually goes on there. So therefore, for example, in the spiritual world, you have Radharani, who's assisted by Lalita and Vishakha. And then what happens is that Radharani, when she comes, her mood is adopted by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in Jagannath Puri in the Gambira, and then who does he surround himself with? Ramananda Rai and Swarup Damodar. And Swarup Damodar is Lalita Sakhi, Ramananda Rai is Vishakha, Mahaprabhu is Krishna, who's in Radha Bhav. So then it starts to make sense. Yeah, Radharani is surrounded by Lalita and Vishakha in the Gambira, experiencing, and that is a reflection of the transcendent reality. So for siddhas, the relationships of this world are a reflection of the transcendent reality. But for the sadhakas, the relationships of this world are an opportunity for purification, to then, it's a preparation to then enter. Like that. Yeah. Yes. Just looking at the time, and then I know you have kirtan also, right? So maybe last question, and then we'll have more days of questions.
Yes, thank you. I have a very basic question. how would you perhaps explain when we see a senior struggling with certain attachments? They're practicing very religiously, and you know, Mangalarti every day, lecture every day, but then we see them struggling with you know, something that seems like that's number one step to overcome. Then how would you explain how is that still there without, I don't know, losing respect, or I don't know if I've explained the question properly.
Yeah, yeah. So when they're still struggling with seemingly basic things, or this one. Yeah, do you want to give an example of something basic? Like, what do you mean by that? Lying.
Yeah, sure, lying. Let's go with, yeah. Yeah, with, let's say, lying or...
Oh, okay, like a human character, human relationships,
yeah,
or like being respectful. Or, every tree grows in its own way. A bamboo, when you plant it, you water it, for 5 years you don't see any growth. And then in the sixth year it just goes, boom. And then other trees, they grow progressively, you know, year after year. Every devotee is growing their spiritual life in different ways. Every devotee has certain strengths, weaknesses, You know, like when they look at organizations, they do a SWOT analysis: strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And if you look at every single devotee, they've got their own SWOT. Right? So every devotee comes in with a strength. Every devotee comes in with... Some devotees are just like sadhakas through and through. But when it comes to service attitude, they lie low, you know. You can't see that. And then other devotees, they can serve. They can serve all day. They're ready. But they're not so disciplined. Not able to wake up. You see, some devotees, very, very nice, great qualities. You know, some people are just, they have it, you know, from day one. Just like, you know, you mentioned, like I mentioned earlier about His Holiness Sachinanda Maharaj. So like a child, like just so, he received that. You know, for some of us, it's not so easy. A bit miserable, a bit, you know, proud, you know, a bit loud. It doesn't come so easy. So everyone has their own configuration that they're dealing with, and everyone is having their own strengths and weaknesses. So that's the first thing we have to understand, that in Krishna consciousness, you can't measure advancement simply based on one thing. One way to measure advancement is faith, but then another advancement is knowledge, but then another one is taste to hear, hearing Krishna katha. Another one is your development of divine quality. Shastra mentions all of these as measures of advancement. But then you may say someone on the fourth one is huge, but on the first one, no. So you don't know. Everyone's developing in their own way. So that's why it's very difficult in one sense to place someone, you know. So I think that's the first thing we should understand. But then, I think in what you're saying, there is also a great lesson, which is that sometimes we think Krishna consciousness is just our dedication to the external practices of surrender, and we don't put enough emphasis on things like character, on things like how I'm carrying myself, good behavior. I'm going to talk about this in one of our sessions when we talk about sadachar. But there's this sense in which sometimes as devotees we can just think like, I'm practicing the process and then everything else in terms of my character change will happen automatically. But no, we have to become humble, we have to become kind, we have to work on our human qualities as well. Otherwise the process won't act as effectively. So I think you're also right that sometimes we can become so spiritual that we just forget to be a nice person, a human.
Yes.
Yeah. And that was Srila Prabhupada's beauty, no? Like Srila Prabhupada was like rooted in the spiritual world with Krishna, but then you just see that picture of Srila Prabhupada at Butler, Pennsylvania, in the Agarwal's homes, and he's just playing with the child, and he has a smile on his face like he's oceanic, just playing. And you think, like, so transcendental, but just so human as well. And that's beautiful. You know, that's the Goswamis. The Goswamis were like with Krishna. They were having all these revelations of Krishna's pastimes. And then they would just walk around Govardhan and everyone loved them. And then they would come into the village and they would say, and how's your daughter? Has she been married yet? And how's the health of your father? And you're thinking like, these guys are like beyond all of this. Mm-hmm. But they're beyond all of this, but they have a human closeness, a human kindness by which they can connect. And I think that's so important in spiritual life, that many devotees have often said that we could do it with a little bit more kindness in our movement. It can become a little like very spiritual, a lot about the rules, but the kindness is lost in that. So I think in the point that you make, there's something to learn for sure.